Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, this is George, and you're listening to a quick bonus episode about the making of The Devil and Daniel Johnston. Hopefully you've already listened to episode 69 with Kip Yulhorn for our October month of music docs, but both episodes should stand on their own. I interviewed Tyler Hubby about his recently completed documentary, Tony Conrad, Completely in the Present, and this is an excerpt from a longer interview we'll be airing at a later date. I had separate questions for Tyler about working with director Jeff Pierzig as an editor on The Devil and Daniel Johnston, including handling Daniel's home movies and audio recordings. And now, my conversation with Tyler Hubby, recorded at his home in Los Angeles. We did an episode where we talked about Devil and Daniel Johnston with a friend, but then it was like, oh, if I can talk to the guy who actually edited it, that would, I'm sure there's like really good stories out of that.
There are a few.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about how you got into that gig?
It's just one of those crazy fortuitous things, you know, like all the best gigs come by who I know. And because I had lived in San Francisco and I was sort of marginally affiliated with the film scene in San Francisco, I had gotten to know the producer, Henry Rosenthal. And I had been living in Los Angeles for a few years, and I would go back periodically to visit family and would visit Henry when I'd swing through San Francisco. And he said, hey, you know, I just started working on this film with this guy that I've known, this young director I really like, and we're looking for an editor, and I think he moved to your street in Hollywood. And I said, wow, really? What's it about? And he says, oh, do you know the singer Daniel Johnston? I said, don't talk to anyone else.
Yeah, lock it in.
So I got back to home and I called up Jeff Pierzig, the director. And I said, hey, I'm Henry's friend. And I live down the street from where you just moved. So I walked up the street and met him. And he saw one thing that I edited and just said, yeah, you got the job. It's fine. And then we ended up editing the movie for 2 years. We didn't even start for almost a year after that.
Uh-huh. What year would that have been? 03,
02? 02 or something. Because yeah. I think, you know, Jeff moved out here after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And they'd started filming. And we started the edit in, I want to say, like January 03. Mm-hmm. And then the film premiered at Sundance in January 05. So we worked on it for 2 years straight.
And there's so much footage in there from all, and a lot of Super 8 and stuff like that. So I'm sure my main question was, I know there's stuff that didn't make it in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is there stuff that's like, you guys had a discussion about it, or were you getting a lot of like kind of directions from Jeff about
some of it was just stuff that sort of fell out mm-hmm. through the process of screening and reviewing. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a bit of a kitchen sink approach to that movie. Like, let's throw everything in.
It's every era. Yeah.
And we actually also had this idea of like every stylistic device, you mm-hmm. know? So, I mean, we were trying to think of what's one we haven't used. Well, we don't have a completely 3D CG shot. So let's put one of those in. So there's one completely 3D CG shot.
I'm trying to think of what's... I just watched this for the first time like a month or two
ago. Well, you
ago.
Wouldn't really know okay. because it looks completely real, uh-huh. but it's actually... it's the CD of the Fun record that goes flipping into space.
Right. Oh, that's CG. Okay.
You know, there was a moment of discussion where it was like, we could film this in real
room.
Space. And I remember, you know, because... Typically, the discussions were that Jeff wanted to do everything in camera, and uh-huh. I was the one saying, well, you know, I think we could do things digitally that'll be a lot easier. Like mm-hmm. he wanted to shoot the slideshows that are used a lot in the film mm-hmm. in camera. And I was demonstrating to him that actually, if we do it as digital animation, we have a lot more control over the image and we mm-hmm. can color correct the image and make it brighter and do, we can edit the image the way we want, you know. And I said, you know, if you try to film a CD falling in space, we need a soundstage that's at least 40 feet tall.
Right. You can get the reflections on the surface of the CD of the lighting.
You've got to light it all the way down yeah. the chute. And you've got to construct a big black tunnel. I was like, that's, let me, and I have a lot of friends who were visual effects artists. I mm-hmm. said, just hold on a second. Let me see if I can talk to these guys.
Yeah.
They turned it around in like a week. You know, it was like, they said, you know, it was sort of like, really? It's just a flat object with some reflection?
Yeah.
That's all you want?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, just spinning in space. They said, how's this?
At least you didn't do like the kind of thing that I would do, which is like, you can do that in PowerPoint. Like, you just like put a flat object and make it spin around.
Well, I mean, but the thing that was really fun though in constructing some of the visual ideas in that was mm-hmm. the way that we mixed digital and in-camera effects. To where you're not really sure what you're looking at. Like mm-hmm. you might see a notebook animation. And the notebook, for instance, was shot as a practical object, lit and shot as a three-dimensional object mm-hmm. with a bunch of stuff. And then the animation was comped into it. We did other things where there's one sequence where we zoom around on a comic book cover. That's actually a photograph of an object propped and lit and really lit nicely. And then our whole thing is what we did is we were actually shooting medium format slides of the, so they had a lot of color, mm-hmm. a lot of high resolution, you know, very low ISO film. And then we'd drum scan these things really big. And then we'd do the 3D animation on this completely doctored up photo. So it was sort of mixing those things. And then there were some other effects that were completely done in camera. There's a thing where a little cassette is lowered onto a pile of cassettes, and that's actually done with a motion control arm that's lowered through a tabletop set. There's a little book that gets flipped through. That whole book was created as a custom prop. And then an animated, actually, to playback.
Like so, stop like for motion instance, kind of animation?
No, it was shot in shot live action, but I had constructed an animatic. You know, I build a lot of animatics when I'm editing, which are just kind of like rough animations, mm-hmm. but they're done, you know, just with like simple JPEGs and kind of dopey looking comps. But we get all the timings worked out, mm-hmm. and then we can send those either to a graphics animator, or in this case, we copied it in live action, and then I had a playback of the edit with countdowns. So I would sit there and we'd roll camera and then I'd roll the playback and I'd say 3, 2, 1, turn, 3, 2, 1, turn. So essentially once we got the, and Devil and Daniel Johnson was shot entirely on Super 16. So once we got the film back from mm-hmm. the lab, I could line it up on the animation and our film was almost dead on to what we had made as an animated file. Mm-hmm. So it was a really kind of, really cool mix of analog technology, in-camera technology, like I said, complete CG in some mm-hmm. cases. And we mixed it all up and blurred all the edges so that you just aren't really sure which is which. Like I've had people tell me that stuff that was completely CG, they thought was in camera and vice versa. And, mm-hmm. and that was really, you know, sort of the fun of it was really playing with all the different tools and tricks that we could do.
And did you guys like work, like, so you guys were living down the street from each other that whole time? And were you just like, kind of like, was he in this garage, like with you? Like,
yeah, we were in his garage yeah. in Hollywood. And it's funny because during the 2-year process of editing that movie, I actually got married and moved away from that street and into this house where uh-huh. we are now. So then I was driving over to my old neighborhood for like the second half of that,
yeah.
of that edit. But it was very, very complicated edit yeah. because it was being shot on film. And we were having to bring the dailies in on DV tape. And then I was, right. And then, and of course, this is 2002, right? 2003, Final Cut Pro is like not even on version 3 yet. I think we actually upgraded to version 3. So, and we just had piles of FireWire drives, and they were constantly failing. And it was just like, you know, it was really a very experimental process. It's funny. There's a really kind of sort of over-involved book on the editing of Cold Mountain. You know, this Anthony Minghella Civil War drama that was edited by Walter Murch, and it's like first feature film edited on Final Cut Pro, and they go into all this detail, like, here's the email we had with the vendor, and here's the... And I, of course, I was like, this was happening exactly the same time that we were editing The Devil and Daniel Johnson and completely doing it garage style.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, they had a multi-million dollar budget, you know, but we were doing all the same things with no money and just FireWire drives we were buying off online or something. It was nuts. So we had a lot of technical challenges.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking even just like getting the whole archive of his cassettes, his like Super 8s that he made as a kid, all that stuff. And then so that stuff had to just get transferred.
Yeah. I mean, all the Super 8, you see pretty much all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. That's there's all the very device. Little Super 8 that got left out. We used almost every inch of it. The cassettes are a whole nother matter. I mean, when Jeff and Henry were out in Texas filming with the Johnstons, and they showed them these garbage bags full of cassettes, you know, they kind of sat down. I mean, Jeff had enough knowledge about the time periods he was interested in that they kind of sat down and pulled the ones that they thought would be interesting. But even that was a process of like bringing home, I think he maybe brought home 100 or 200 tapes out of 400. It was something absurd like that. And transferred them to CD. And all this stuff seems like no big deal. But like in 2002, like
dude,
managing a massive sort of digital database of assets, especially high res assets, was it was maddening because we were backing everything up onto DVD-Rs and just because FireWire drives were so expensive, we couldn't afford to just make clones of everything. So he had all these tapes transferred to CD, and then he personally went through and listened to all of them.
Wait, Daniel or Jeff? Jeff did.
Listened to all these tapes and made transcriptions notes. And notes on all these tapes. And found these moments, you know, and then some tapes, I don't know if we even listened to them because of the dates. It was sort of like a little pre-edit, like, well, you know, as far as our research tells us, nothing really happened in August of that year, so we can skip that one. So who knows? I mean, that was a thing. At some point,
you that just stuff go back to the family?
Yeah, that all went back to them. But at some point, you just have to say enough is enough and just pick what you're going to pick, you know, because you could just be listening for years and researching for years. So that, and the tapes really became invaluable in that movie because they shot, I want to say 6 or 7 separate sit-down interviews with Daniel, and he could really not tell his own story in the present state he was in.
Mm-hmm.
But on tape, on those vintage cassettes, he was alive and present and totally in the moment. And it was like, so it became through that process of editing, we realized the whole movie had to be told through the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when he was manic and fresh and 25 years old and just like on fire.
Yeah.
And when he was 50 and overweight and heavily medicated, he could just barely get the words out.
Right. Yeah.
I see him in the third act of the film. That's really what he is.
And it just came out recently that he's going to just fully retire from performing live at all.
Yeah, I saw that. It's only just like 2 or 3 shows, not even an LA show.
I don't think so. I think the last show might be Northwest, like Portland.
There's something
Seattle,
like that. Yeah. I'd read that they're going to screen the movie you know, as part of that. And I obviously, I mean, I'd seen a lot of Daniel Johnson, so I kind of stopped watching him, you know, going to see him for a while. You know, it's like I'd had enough. But if he'd come to Los Angeles, of course I would go. But
now, did you interact with him much other than like maybe like openings and stuff?
I had actually met him at 01 Gallery at an art
San
opening.
Jose, is that?
No, it's here in Los Angeles. Yeah. It's actually, there's a small scene in the film when John Pokna, the gallery owner, says, I don't know what happened, but we've sold the whole show out before it's even opened.
Right.
Well, I had actually gone to the gallery exhibition that he held a year prior and bought a piece.
Oh, nice.
And met Dan. That was the first time I met Daniel in person. So it was before I even started working on the movie.
Oh, okay.
I'd actually been to that same gallery, purchased an artwork there, and met Daniel, who was very reclusive and you know, didn't make eye contact and sort of shook your hand and like, hi, you know, mm-hmm. was not really interested. And then the next time I really met him was at Sundance, you know, when mm-hmm. the film crew and the Johnston family all shared a giant cabin in Park City.
In like 05 or something.
Yeah, it was Sundance 05, yeah.
And so I imagine that like, when did Jeff start doing the, he was filming stuff before you came along, right?
Yeah, they started filming in 2002, I think mm-hmm. early or late 2001. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I met with Jeff in 2002 and we were sort of stayed in touch. And then the idea was to start the edit in 2003. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think I'd had him hire an assistant editor, you know, a couple months prior to start organizing things in advance. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember, but that was sort of it. I remember we started in January 03 and went for 2 years.
There's a bit of tape in there that I'm wondering where it came from, which is, I think, is it Lee Ronaldo and Steve Shelley like looking for him?
Yeah.
Like, did they tape that themselves?
That's their tape, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering like where, and then so they just provided that. They're just like, we have this.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. Just reaching out to the people mm-hmm. In the community, in the scene, whatnot, you know, who had materials.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to like, you know,
of course.
Talk about that.
People
stuff
still
a little bit.
Talk about that movie.
It's so,
which
it's
is,
so
I
unique.
Mean, that's a great yeah. thing. If you can make a movie that is like, what now, 12 years later, you know, people still talk about it. And mm-hmm. it's like, if you can get one of those,
yeah,
that's really good.